Bob? He turned toward Iger. Bob can't run this company, he said dismissively. Four directors confirmed this account. Eisner said he meant that Gold and Roy didn't believe Iger could run Disney, and that this was also Iger's interpretation of the remark. Eisner sat down. Several other directors looked shell-shocked. Mitchell quickly adjourned the meeting. The next day, Roy sent Iger a short, handwritten message of condolence. "I've never seen anyone treated so badly," Roy said. Iger reported this to Eisner, who immediately phoned Roy. "I know you sent Bob a note," he said accusingly. 15. For all Eisner's concern over leaks, the article in the Los Angeles Times by Verrier and James Bates had sketchy details of the September 24th board meeting. Although sources described a blunt meeting during which Chief Executive Michael Eisner was repeatedly questioned about whether he could meet a series of financial targets, it also stated that details of the much-anticipated meeting at Disney's Burbank headquarters remained mostly under wraps. Most of the information in the article appeared to come from Disney itself. The company announced the appointments to the Nominating and Governance Committee, and Eisner said, "Today we furthered our commitment to ensure that Disney remains among the most progressive boards in America on governance issues." Ravetta Bowers, the much-revered head of the Center for Early Education, also continued to feel the brunt of the independence issue. Although Bowers' son no longer worked at Disney, the center had been the beneficiary of Disney largesse. The school's library was called the Disney Library because the Disney Foundation had funded it. More recently, Eisner had indicated that Disney would donate $250,000 toward a younger children's library decorated in a Winnie the Pooh motif. But Disney wrote a letter saying that it was improper for Disney to contribute to an organization headed by a director. More to the point, the chairman of the center's board was Susan Disney Lord, one of Roy's daughters, which meant Bowers' loyalty to Eisner couldn't be taken for granted in the looming battle with Roy and Gold. Bowers told me she sided with neither Eisner nor Susan, and, "I always voted my conscience." That summer, Susan, who was also on the school's building committee, noticed that both the Winnie the Pooh theme and the Disney name had been dropped from the building plans. When Susan asked Bowers what had happened, and what had happened to the promised Disney gift, Bowers said, "Michael pulled it." Eisner insisted that he was only trying to adhere to the highest standards of corporate governance. In the wake of the contentious September meeting, Eisner asked Roy to have lunch with him, anxious to see if there was any way he could mollify him and drive a wedge between him and Gold, whom Eisner perceived as the real troublemaker. The two met in a private dining room off the Disney commissary. "Roy," Eisner began, "I don't understand this. You have a great life. You've made a fortune. I protect you. Why are you doing this?" "I agree with Stanley," Roy replied. "What do you mean you agree with Stanley? What exactly do you agree with?" "You shouldn't have bought ABC." The response made Eisner furious.